Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, April 19th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. This is episode 416. I have a super special guest, comedian, podcaster, black dad, Mike B from the Open Mic Radio podcast and the Three Guys On podcast, Sock Puppet number one to be exact. He's got a brand new album out in stores wherever you buy or stream music. You should buy it, obviously. He's got, and his new album's called Promote Mike B, hashtag Promote Mike B. And that's available wherever you listen and buy your music. It's a terrific comedy album. I'm going to share my conversation with Mike B with you in a few minutes. Right now, I'm just going to talk to you. I'm sitting here in my apartment on my couch where I record most of these episodes. And I've had a pretty good day. I've had a week, pretty good week. TPS reports by day, keeping me sane. Some of the emails I've gotten upset with some people, but none of my bosses or anything. It's just some people that think they're better than you a little bit, and they try to treat you bad. But no, it's been a pretty good week in spite of it all. Family and friends are healthy. The friends that I didn't think were healthy, that told me that they weren't completely healthy, are feeling better. So that's a good thing. Just going to be positive. Had some good conversations this week. You can catch me soon on the Vag podcast. Hung out with Sarah Tolomash and Adrian Appalucci on Zoom. That was my first Zoom podcast that I did. That was fun. I'm really concerned about my laptop. It's getting to the point. So it's been over 4 years since I've had this thing. I got it in 2016, and this was right around the time I bought it. So it's been at least 4 years, and it's been a good computer. It's been really good. The homie Christian Polanco, who I talked to, who's going to be on a forthcoming episode, he's my computer guy. If you've been with this podcast since the jump, he was my, as the good homie J.L. Covan calls it, my tech stuff guy. And he set me up with the podcast equipment and all this stuff. So he's my guy. When I needed to make a big purchase, he always comes through, and he was telling me, don't get these unless you really want to. If you really want to get a good computer, you got to spend some money and don't fall for these fat kids deals, where they have these computers that are like $500 and $600 for these MacBook Airs. It's very tempting to do that, but I'm trying not to fall in for that. So that's kind of, you just have to spend some money and take care of some things. So that's kind of what I've been dealing with. I made a prime rib this week, which was really fun. That was my second attempt. I put some pictures on Instagram and Twitter. Got some love for it. That was my second time doing it. Christmas time, I made prime rib for Christmas, and it was a hit. My mom and dad liked it. And then I just said something that just told me the next time I go out, I'm going to get a prime rib, and I'm going to enjoy myself, just to make a piece of meat that I can chip away at for a week and some change. And it turned out really well. So I'm going to have some of that tonight. I did not eat any last night. I did, but I just like cut a couple little slices off and tasted it for, and it was great. Turned out really good. So I know how to do that now, ladies. And shout out to the meeting place in Haskell, New Jersey. I got I don't know if there's people that, if you live in a big city or like a area that's really, I guess during the pandemic, like an area that's highly concentrated, and you try to go to the grocery store and stuff, and it's like a shit show. What I will suggest is, if you go to a town that's a small town that's maybe 15 or 20 minutes away, this place that I went to, this butcher shop meeting place, they had a shop right near it, and they had a Stop and Shop. So on my way to the butcher's, I just clocked that there was a Stop and Shop there. And I think I might have seen that going to a show anyway, a show that I had like a couple months before, earlier this year. And saw the Stop and Shop. I was like, I'm going to check that out. It's not that many people there. It's like 3:30. So I get my prime rib, and on my way out, I go to that Stop and Shop. Not that many people there. They had good fruits and vegetable selection. They had meat. They had pretty much everything. Some of the shelves were, obviously, some of the areas were ravaged where people just bought all the shit. But it was actually pretty decent. And I was able to get what I needed, a lot of the things that I wanted. And I was Gucci, as the kids say. And so I would suggest, you know, if you're living in an area like I do, and there's a lot of people when you go to the grocery stores near you, maybe try one that's outside the beaten path a little bit. That worked for me. Going early in the morning, I just went after I logged off from working, and just went out and got a couple things. I think the last time I told you, I was what did I do? It was Good Friday, and so there were tons of people, you know, at this, all the stores that I checked. So that might be a helpful tip. I don't know. Take that for what you will. I've been finding places to get masks on Instagram. I got a couple for myself. Sent some to my parents. Ordered some randomly from Amazon that's probably going to come in May or something like that, early to mid-May. But these that I ordered from my parents, it looks like they're going to come within the next couple weeks. So, yeah. So hopefully that helps. I sent somebody a link. I can actually find the place that I went to. I'll give you the name. realthread.myshopify.com. That's one place you can try, and you can get a couple masks, and you know, that it helped me. So I'm just putting it out there for you. So if that works for you, you can go for that. And I think that's all I want to blab about right now. Patreon, subscribe to Patreon. There's good stuff over there. As I'm talking, by the time you get this, there'll be shit on Patreon. Probably two possible new additions to the Patreon. So let's just get to Mike B. Mike B, this conversation I had with him was a couple of weeks ago. Like I said, there's some in the bank. And I'm happy to have some in the bank for you guys. I'm excited to keep giving you guests as much as I can. And in this pandemic, and so you don't have to listen to me blab all the time. So, yeah, with Mike B, I listened to his album. I thought it was fantastic. I listened to it a couple times, and it's just really, really fun. And I say to him, and I said to a couple other people, if this were the 80s and he would have a sitcom, like the 80s or 90s when you would go to Montreal and you get the world offered for you, he'd at least have one season of a sitcom based on this album. It's really good. It's Promote Mike, hashtag Promote Mike B. Make sure you check it out. And without further ado, here is my conversation with the great Mike B. All right, I'm just going to, we're starting. I was trying to be lazy, and I tried recording for the listeners. I tried doing a quick and dirty intro before the episode, but I figure I'll just tag on an intro before so I wouldn't have to upload it and all that. Mike, how the hell are you, man? How are you holding up?
Hey, I'm good, Chris, man. Hey, look, I got my family. I got my kids. We're all in the house. My sister-in-law, we're all in the house. And, you know, I done cleaned up my office. I done, you know, she got her office. She got her space. And I have like three or four pair of new Jordans that I haven't worn yet. And I probably won't be able to wear them until June 11th.
Oh, my God, so. Dude. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. Like, it's so funny. I was talking to Randolph and Andy when I did Three Guys On a couple weeks ago. And we're talking about, you know, the clubs, not being able to go to the clubs and stuff like that and work and do shows and all that. And I was like, and Andy said, yeah, you know, Mike B was the last person to be on stage at the DC Improv. And I was like, oh, man, I was like thinking about that. You know, I saw his post and I liked the post. And, you know, you had like a sentimental post and like, oh, it was great, you know, great time working. I think you were working with Dan Soder, right?
Yeah, I was working with Dan Soder, yeah.
Yeah, he's a cool
dude, too.
Yeah, good dude. And I was like, oh, shit, do you have those Stranger Things? Are those the Tailwinds? And that's like all I saw. And you were like, yeah, man. Yeah, I have a bunch of like, I don't have a lot of Jordan. I think I have three pair. I have those, I have the Jordan 4s, the Breads, and I have... the Black Cats that came out like in February. I was saving the Breads for when I was supposed to tape my fucking album. But I don't know when that'll be, if that'll ever be. I have a few pair that I haven't really worn yet.
Yeah, I just, I like pull them all out the closet because my wife, she doesn't like boxes.
Uh-huh.
So I have to throw all my shoes like into my man area. So I pulled them all out and I stacked them up and I didn't realize, because I'm not really a big sneaker. You wouldn't believe this, but I'm not really a big sneakerhead. Like, I got into it. Maybe I just started like 2 years ago, maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ago. Yeah. So I just, you know, when you hang around people, you know, I was hanging out with Dom. We're talking to Dom. And
oh, yeah. He's a big Dominic sneaker girl. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, when I broke my ankle, like, he was clowning me because I used to just buy those regular shoes for, like, Rack Room, you know? You know, I was like, give me a pair of, you know, Rack Room shoes. But when I broke my ankle, he was like, yeah, because you wear them cheap-ass shoes. And I'm like, come on, man. It ain't the shoes. And then, you know, so he invited me to a sneaker group, whatever. Then I bought one pair, you know, on a sneaker app. And mm-hmm. then you know that once you get that notification, say, got him.
You know, yep.
Mm-hmm. I got addicted. So, you know, it'd be shoes sometimes. I'm like, man, I don't even really want them for real, but I need that fix real quick. So I just try it. Let me just see if I can get them. I got them.
Yeah, dude, that's a thing, man. Cause I'm not a big sneakerhead. And like you, I don't know that I've ever bought anything at Rack Room, but I've gotten stuff at DSW that I really liked. Like,
yeah.
I've gotten a pair of like Nikes. I don't know what they were, but I think it may have been like 7 or 8 years ago. I got these pair of Nikes at DSW, and I've gotten so many compliments about them. You know, they're beaters now, but I remember when they were fresh. Like people would say, "Oh my God, I like your sneakers!" And then I would be in the green room with comics that had J's and had the Air Force Ones and all these crazy sneakers, and you know, yeah. People would be like, "What about mine?" But they liked my shit, and they were from DSW, and I paid $60 for them. You know,
yeah, I had a rule because I'm from North Virginia, so like we had all we used to wear our shoes were Air Force Ones, so we used to call them DCs.
Okay.
But they were just Air Force Ones, and I just had a rule. I'm like, I'm not paying over $100 for a pair of shoes, and DCs were between $60 to like $80.
Yeah,
so. So it was like I used to work a little part time job, little make a minimum wage. So I get my little $200-$300 check.
Yeah,
let me get a couple of these Air Force Ones, whatever DCs were. Yeah, Air Force Ones, and I just get all different colors and stuff like that. But you always have to have a pair of fresh whites when they came out, and the blacks. But I haven't worn a pair of DCs in like 20 some years. But As I got older, this was like, yo, I'm not paying over $100. I was like, I refuse to pay for a pair of Jordans. Absolutely. I'm not standing in line for a pair of Jordans.
Oh,
not
God.
But yeah. The app came out.
And why should you? Yeah. Yeah. Do you do the sneakers app?
I'll do the sneakers app. Once the sneaker app came out, it was like a game change. I don't got to stand in line. I could just be at work. And
it's great.
And get that disappointment while I'm at work.
Oh, dude. So the first time that I tried to do it, it was those Air Max 90s, the off-whites. I think they were like the Air Max 90s. And it was either, they had like the black ones, and they had the desert gray, the desert tan or whatever. And they were 150 each. And I tried to put in for both of them and I lost. And it was like double heartbreak. And so the only other time that I got them, when I got the Jordan 4s, but the breads, whatever, but it's not that popular of it. It's a popular shoe, but it's not like, there's no scarcity. You know what I mean? So I was able to get those. And then I tried to get, when I got those breads, I mean the Black Cats, I had to get them from like Hibbett Sports online because nobody else had them. Like Foot Locker didn't have them or anything. But But it is kind of, it does make you feel sad when you, I was at work. I was like, I'm going to get these. I was like, Chris, where's that file? I was like, I'm trying to get these sneakers. And like go ahead.
I was at work one time, and I think it was either the cause I got my coworkers. I got my coworker into it. I have a new job and I have my old coworkers into it.
Yeah.
I'm like looking in the hallway, and I think it was the Jordan ones, and I'm not sure if it was the that was coming different versions. Anyway, it might have been the Stranger Things.
Okay.
And I remember just setting the alarm, you know, to come out like around, I think it's either 9 or 10. And
it's like 10 o'clock,
So I set my alarm for like 9:59.
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, like, hey, when this alarm go off, y'all just leave me alone for like 3 minutes. And then it was funny because, my boss, she was into it too. So I was like, oh, it's on. When the alarm went off, like, she ran to her app too. And we both was up there trying to wait for the shoes, and we just sat there, like, looking at each other.
And then,
and then she got her door. She's like, I got them! And then she got excited. And then I didn't get mine because I would just say, I got that joke. I was like, I'm sorry, you didn't get them. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, man, it's a rough game. I can see how people get caught up. I was just like, okay, I know my limit. And there's shoes that I see that, excuse me, that look cool and everything, but I'm just like, nah. Because those Travis Scotts, they were like, they're kind of they're popular, but I'm not gonna go for those. But yeah, I've only had the app for like almost a year.
Yeah, but you know those Travis Scotts, they're flippable. It's all about, if you get those, it's all about just flipping, just getting them and selling them right back. Because I put my bid in. I know somebody who actually got them and they made a pretty penny on the flip side.
Oh, how much did they make?
It made close to in profit, maybe about another extra, like another 1,000.
Oh man,
yeah,
that's a lot. Whew. Yeah, because what is shoes? They're like 150 or something like that.
Yeah, 150. Then you end up making 1,000 off of them.
Damn, that's crazy. Yeah, it's a crazy world out there when it comes to I'm in the sneakers. I kind of like just casually, like I'll follow them. You follow the sneaker accounts on Instagram. I like action figures. I'm casual into that. That's like another world, and you just get into. Then you think about like the seedy underbelly of it. It's just like, wow, this is really crazy. I can't get into it this much. I gotta fall back.
Like Dom got me into it, and we realized that, you know, you could take your shoes and like trade them into a sneaker shop, and I did that a couple of times. I've taken
a pair
of shoes and I took them to this place called Cool Kicks. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're negotiating over a pair of shoes that only wore once. Like, hey,
like
he's looking at them, he's looking at the sole of it, he's making sure that the insoles are still intact and everything. He like, I think I gave him my Space Jams.
Oh, wow. Okay.
At the Space Jams, because I couldn't fit them no more. And And it was like, we'll give you 175. Like, come on, man, you can't do two. We're like, nah, man, got a little dirt on the inside.
So it's like GameStop for sneakers.
Yeah, like, come on, man, I can't get two. He's like, nah, man, I can the best I can do is 175.
Oh man,
I guess.
That's wild. Yeah, I mean, go ahead. No, it's one of those things. Like, if you have a little bit, I don't have that much disposable income, but you know how sometimes if you get a nice little windfall and you're like, oh, I want to get something nice for myself, you know,
yeah,
you think about those. But it's just like, I could see myself going down that rabbit hole and not coming out. Like, I think I'm good. I think my holy grails would be those Air Max 90s now. Because now they're like $800 or $500. I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I can't justify that. Like, I'd have to, the world would have to be back in some kind of order. They would, like, we could go outside or when, let's say when we get this vaccine, who knows when that'll be. Could be a year from now. But if we get this vaccine and we can go out to some normalcy and I'm making a little money, I would probably do that. I might. But for now, it's just like, stick with what I got.
Yeah.
Rock my New Balances to the grocery store.
I get into these rabbit hole collections, like now with shoes. Prior to that, I was collecting wrestling belts.
Yeah, and, that's right.
And like my wife, she's like, here we go again. Like before that, it was like watches. I had like a big watch case where I own like maybe like 10 watches. And everyone it was like a couple of Victors and stuff. And they're like, oh, that's a nice watch. That's a nice watch, you know?
Yeah.
So I get down this rabbit. So like my new one is the last pair I bought, Jordans I bought. Like I say that on the low because my daughter just walked in and she's a snitch.
But, she'll tell me.
Yeah. The Jordans that just came out, the gray ones, they're like the Air Max. They look like the Air Maxes, but, they're gray and neon. They just came out.
Like with that neon green on the lace part. Are those the fours? Yeah. Oh yeah. Those look cool.
Yeah. I just got those. And, I thought it was going to be like rare. Mm-hmm. So when I got them, I was in a barbershop and I got them. And then, I was like, yes, and I'm about to go to flip them. So I immediately went to StockX to try to sell them, see what the resale value was.
Yeah.
And then, the numbers kept going down. Then I went back to the sneaker app and realized that they had put some more back out. So I would have stuck with them. So it was like, okay, now I got to buy it. Now I got to put some on with them. Now I got to actually find some to wear with them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I don't get too flashy. Like, I like, because you have to match it with something. And I don't think I look that good with shit that's like flashy. You know, like black dudes, we buy a baseball cap because it matches with a sneaker or shirts. When I used to wear baseball caps, I don't really wear them that much anymore, but it just be those like, oh, this matches this. And they're like, oh, is that your team? Because there would be people that would come up to me. I think like a lot in Chicago, I think I would be wearing a cap and it would match something that I had on. And they would be like, oh, you really like those, that team, bro? It's like, no, this just matches. Just matches my shirt. I don't really care. I don't care about baseball.
Yeah, I try to avoid buying like, now I'm a Miami Heat fan. I used to get tired of those, what do you call them? Them table talk conversations.
Okay.
Those icebreaker conversations. Like, I'm wearing the Astros hat. Like, oh, man, I didn't like the Astros. Like, I don't. Now I'm stuck into this unnecessary conversation.
And you just shut them down. You're just not open at all. And then you're kind of a dick when you don't say anything else after that. Well, fuck that guy. I tried to open up to him. I tried to talk to him.
He just stuck in his conversation. All because you wore a Houston Astros jersey. You're like, nah, man.
I was at the mall. My wife was in where my wife was at the jewelry store. I was in Lids. I said, let's just make this happen. This hat looks good.
Like, oh man, you're not a true Blue Devils fan. Like, I'm not. I'm not. Don't you see the shoes? I'm not. I'm just.
Yeah. Wasn't that on a movie, or it's at least in one movie? I'm trying to think what movie that was in, or maybe I'm trying to think like just like, oh, this hat matched my thing, or like black dudes. Maybe a comic said it, or a white comic said it, or some shit. Maybe Neil mm-hmm. Brennan said it. I don't remember, but I just know it's funny. I know that thing, like maybe Patrice might have said something about it too, or I don't mm-hmm. know. Well, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. I know, to try to keep my my fashion very simple, because you pay so I pay so much for the shoes.
Yeah.
That you know, it's like you know, so it's like I get the shoes from the sneaker app, but then I mosey on over to the Target and okay. I get me a pack of t-shirts for like maybe like $20, a pack of t-shirts with $20. You know, a pair of jeans, a nice pair of jeans, whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's then at that point, it's just about the jacket, whether it's a jean jacket or, you know, like some sort of fancy jacket or just something simple.
Yeah.
That's the outfit. That's it.
I'm a big and tall guy, Destination XL. So I'll get a nice polo shirt and some jeans. And yeah, then the shoes, you just try to have like a nice pair of shoes, like show shoes. Like yeah. if you're doing a weekend, you want to. You know, just feel comfortable, because that's how I am. Like, I know he's canceled, but I like how Louis would just come out and went like a polo shirt and some jeans, and or like Bill Burr, like wear a button down. I remember one time Mike Epps did a special in a really nice polo shirt. Mm-hmm. I forget what special it was, but it was just like, yeah, it's just like a nice polo shirt. And he probably stunned it with some jewelry, but it wasn't ostentatious or anything, but just like,
yeah.
You know,
it wasn't just going to take it away. Just, you know, simple is always better.
Yeah.
You know? Especially if you got something, like I said, a nice pair of sneakers, whatever. You got like a nice jewelry piece you're rocking.
Yeah.
You know, simple is always better. You get out here with tiger print.
I like Little Rel's special. He had on a velour. Did he have on a velour suit? Like a sweatsuit? He had on a sweatsuit. And he had on the Toronto, like the Drake Jordan 4s, mm-hmm. like those Raptor 4s that came out like maybe last fall. And it was just like, he was clean. He was sweating yeah. He was sweating his ass off, but he was clean though. And I like those, yeah. like those Jordans, those J's just like accentuated what he had on. But enough about those guys. What about you, dude? I want to talk a little bit. I want to do like origin story stuff too, but since we're talking about specials, I want to talk about your new album, your number one Thank album you. On the iTunes chart, Promote Mike B. What did you wear for that?
Hey, that's great. You know what's funny? I wore the Air Max Votex 90s.
Okay, I'm gonna look that up.
Yeah, I gotta make sure I said that correctly. It's like all these funky colors.
It's okay.
I wore the Votex Nikes Air Max.
Vortex yeah. 90s?
Yeah, the Vortex, yep.
Okay.
But they're like purple. It was like purple and... yeah, I got the box later. But yeah, it was like purple and orange. It was like a bunch of funky colors.
Okay.
And no one knew. So I bought... And I had a Levi's jacket that was like... they had fur on the inside.
Wow.
The jean jacket. So it was like fur jean jacket, like iceberg slim, a black t-shirt, and some cranberry Levi jeans.
Okay.
And then I got a picture too. We're friends on Facebook.
I'm sure I've seen it. I saw it, but I'm thinking about it. I do now that you mentioned yeah. cranberry, I do remember that.
Yeah, it was the Nike Air Max 90 Votec OG.
Okay.
Yeah. Air Max 90 Votec OG, and I remember I bought the jacket and the jeans that morning because I didn't know what I was going to wear,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I wanted a jean jacket, and I knew I wanted jean jacket, and then I didn't know what shoes I was going to wear. So when I saw the purple pants, I was like, all right, cool, hopefully this works, mm-hmm. and I put it on, and. And my friends, who aren't sneakerheads, by the way, my friends is on the show. None of them are sneakerheads.
Okay. Right?
So they were making fun of. They was making fun of me. You know, they was like, what, "Like you wearing purple pants? You wearing cranberry pants? You wearing cranberry?" And I'm like, "No, you ain't seen the sneaks yet."
Yeah.
So I opened up drawing something like it was like Jesus was in the box, like the lights cut on and and like this high beam of the Lord just rising up from the box, and they're like, oh my God.
Nice.
Then I threw on the jacket. And then, and mind you, I shot this in September, so it was still kind of summer.
Did you? So did you video? You did film too?
Yeah. It's, I actually have the video of the of my whole set, which I'm thinking about putting. I would try to put it on YouTube, but I don't have enough time.
Okay.
On YouTube, they won't. They won't let me put the whole thing up.
Oh, they won't let you put the whole thing.
Yeah, they want. I guess you know YouTube. Sometimes, I guess you got to put up so many videos, and they grant you more time. You put up more videos, and they grant you more time, stuff like that. So, I created a whole new YouTube account, so I could just do it specifically for my comedy.
Yeah,
and I guess I haven't developed enough videos yet that warrants me to be able to put the full video of my setup.
Gotcha.
But I did that, and I was sweating my ass off, yo, because it was the middle of summer. And we had a little bit of the air conditioner on because I rented out the space. We did it at the DC Art Center.
What's that place like?
It's a small black box theater.
Okay.
So basically, the seats are going up, and it's the space. So basically, it's maybe a 40 to 50 seater.
Okay.
I did my first comedy special there. It's really good for recording.
Okay.
And my wife is printing out papers. I don't know if you hear that.
That's all right.
So it's 40-50 seater, black box theater. You can rent out the space. I normally try to rent it out for that whole weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Not the weekend, but it's like that because you can rent it out in 2-hour increments.
Okay.
But because I believe that if you're going to pay money, I have to give you a full. I have to give you full face.
Yeah.
You know, it just can't be like I'm doing two shows, but you know, I'm only going to give you, I'm going to sham you on the production value of the show. Like I have to give you everything.
Right.
So, you know, so I'm going to need that full, I'm going to need the full 4 hours just, you know, cause, for like setting and, you know, I had a whole set design.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, I'll talk about that in a minute, but it's a black box theater, 40, 50 seater, really cheap, easy to fill up. You know, if you get five and it's sit nice and tight. So if you sell maybe 12 tickets, let's say 15 out of the 40, if you take pictures, it still looks cool.
Okay.
You know, I sold it out, but you still get the hearty laughs and stuff like that. And, you know, you got the backstage area. So good spot.
Yeah, man, I really liked it. I mean, I listened to it twice already, and it to me, like I was telling Andy, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm about to talk to Mike B, and I was telling him, I was like, you know, and I just told you before we started, you know, like if this were the 80s or 90s and this you were a comic out there back then, this is like sitcom ready. Like the material is like, oh, let's give this guy, let's build a sitcom around him. And it's just, it's wholesome. It's smart. It's funny. There's a little, I kind of like what I like about you. Cause we never worked together and I don't think I'd ever worked with you or anything or seen your act. I just know you from Three Guys On, you being funny on that show. And we did, we actually did a show together and whatnot, but a Three Guys On episode, but like, it's smart and it's funny and you kind of like teeter on this darkness that with the track number 15, like when you talk about Cecil, I don't want to give anything away, but it's like, it's very funny and it's relatable to a lot of people, but it's like, ooh, this is kind of dark. Like it's as a taste thing, as just like a fan of the art form. It's like, I like that. I like how you kind of dance. You kind of dance in that darkness a little bit and you come back. And I think it's just the way that you, your delivery, like you're likable and you're able to make that stuff work. How long did it take you to come up with this material for this project?
I did my first album. The first one is called The Life of Times, the Old Mike B.
Okay.
Which is, I call it my Reasonable Doubt.
Okay.
Album. It's not on iTunes or anything. It's like from my trunk.
Yeah.
So I did that. So I want to say about 5 years. It took me 5 years.
How many years in were you when you did your Reasonable Doubt, the Life and Times?
My Reasonable Doubt one, I was probably like 5 to 6 years in.
Okay.
And I was talking to my friend Greg, and I was just like, who's my current mentor, one of my friends, Greg Stevens, and I was like, hey man, I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to record an album. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to get my friends to come do it with me. Well, we did a show together. We always do shows together. And I'm going to give you this backstory before I get to the other part. Anyway, so I wanted everybody to do, we was going to do record our sets, right? Mm-hmm. And then when we started traveling, we was going to break our sets down into like DVD, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, after the shows, we could sell our own individual albums to the people after the show's merch. But no one saw that vision.
Okay.
So they were like, nah, we don't want to do that. You know, I'm like, all right, cool. But I was like, yo, I'm going to do mine. So, mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I was probably about 6 years in, and did the same spot. That one I did about an hour. So there's some jokes that I took from the first one. Maybe like two or three, mm-hmm. and I flipped it over to this one. So for this one, I just released. It took me about 5 years. The last joke, the very last one, where I talk about my daughter, that was the first and only time I performed it.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I kept because you know when you go to open mics, you try to practice and stuff like that.
Sure.
You only have with so much time to work on a particular joke. And that joke is like 4 minutes long, and they're only going to give you like 3 to 5 minutes. So mm-hmm. there was really no time for me to really like rehearse it. So I would just be at home rehearsing it in my head and writing it down and saying it out loud over and over again. And like my main goal was to, I knew the opening was going to be rough, but the opening was just a setup for the last part.
right. So, yeah, I love that because it's like, yeah, he fucking did it. Like, you know, just like, yeah, he stuck the landing. That's what I really. It's like it's a technically sound album. Like it's like the way you start it, and then you give him the nice, you hit him with the closer at the end too. It's great, man.
Yeah. So and then like track between think it's Cecil.
Mm-hmm.
I was on that joke for a while. Mm-hmm. And I stopped because a lot of that stuff I was doing for a while, and I just stopped doing it because it'd be funny, and then I forget to do it, whatever, and I get stuck into my own little ways.
Right.
I was working with Greg again, and I was, you know, I did the Cecil joke, and it's another one of those jokes that you have to do it with act outs. You know,
yeah.
You know, you see the video. There's act outs in it, but you know, but he helped me with some of the tags in it, which made it funnier, and that's what it was missing. Sometimes it just be like one or two words. You're a comic, so you know. Sometimes something could be funny,
mm-hmm.
but it's another comic, like you know, it'd be funny. You know how you can make it really funny?
Yeah,
take this and do that. And I'm like, all right, cool. And I did that, and I took it and I did that, and then I changed like the part in there about what he uses, and then it was all over.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was doing that joke, and like it popped, it got like a really big pop.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect the pop.
Yeah. Are you talking about what you recorded, or like when before you laid this down at the recording?
No. Like when I was on the joke as we was recording.
Yeah, because I noticed that too. Yeah. I was like, oh shit. Yeah.
I didn't, because the parts is just funny. So in some of the albums where I thought the pops would be at,
mm-hmm.
they won't. They wasn't there, but it was like somewhere else.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
Pops would be at.
Yeah.
So it was like okay. So you know, it's one of those things. Like if I did this all in like one take, mm-hmm. so I didn't do like four shows, and then we're gonna edit it down to the best ones, like. What's out is really just one show.
Yeah.
I just did, and it's like, man, if I would have did two shows, I would have saw that, and then I would have flipped it.
Mm-hmm.
I would have flipped these around and stuff like that. But yeah,
sometimes that happens though. It's like the audience will tell you where the funny parts are,
yeah.
And like you kind of like, because do you have a process? What's your process like? Do you write your joke and then do it on stage, or do you just like write on stage?
I write on stage.
Yeah. Like I'm like that too. Like it's like I'll have an idea and then I'll talk it out. And then you're like, oh, they're laughing here. So I'll keep that. keep the like parts where they laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. I just self edit as we go along.
Yeah.
I hate when new comics like ask me for like advice and stuff. And they're like, what's your writing style? How you write? Cause I don't want to tell them, you know, like, hey man, I don't really write like that. I just go on stage. I just go for it.
Yeah.
Do you do notes or
anything? Like you like have like a book? Cause I do like the bullet point stuff where I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh, is this
Chris Rock style?
Yeah. Like you say, like I want to talk about like a parking, like a getting towed. And yeah. I'll be like, maybe I'll have something that sticks out. And then like, I'll use that on stage and I'll be like, okay, then maybe that's, you know, then yeah. I just try to feel it out. Cause there's,
yeah,
some, go ahead.
I normally just do the, I do the bullet points.
Uh-huh.
And something pop up, something I think is funny that pop up throughout the day. And I'll write it down on my little phone memo pad.
Yeah.
And then I'll make sure that I try to do it on stage because I got a couple of mics. I try to do it at a mic, whatever. And then I'll just literally just rough draft it on stage and then see what the funny parts are.
Right, right, right. So you only did this in one take.
Yeah.
Damn. So it was just one show.
Yeah, one show. But
were you stressed out?
You know what? The first one I did, I was like worried. This mm-hmm. one, and I was telling Randolph and Andy and a couple of my friends this, the first one, I don't think I had the right people around me at the time.
Oh, wow.
Like in my circle and stuff like that. Not just like, you know, sometimes you can have like friends and stuff like that.
I understand.
And like even in my personal life wasn't really straight.
Mm.
So it was, I just got married. My son was just born. And I had some other stuff going on. So I was like in a different headspace.
Okay.
This one, I was, because I had the right people around me, my family was a lot stronger in my relationship and stuff like that. It was more about just getting it done.
Yeah.
Than anything else. I knew once I got on stage, it was going to be all right.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, the hardest part, you know, when you produce a show is the hardest part is just selling out
mm-hmm.
the show. So you'll be able to at least make some money. You know, put towards your recording, you know, being able to pay the, you know, the person's recording and editing and stuff like that, and maybe pay a couple of comics and stuff like that. And it sold out in a week and a half.
Nice.
And so it was that. And then me and my friend, we run Broken Mic Comedy, which is our open mic we do in D.C. And mm-hmm. we produce shows around D.C. and Virginia and Maryland. And this was like our very first show. This was supposed to be like our Rockefeller moment.
Sure.
You know, it was our Rockefeller album, you know. So it was like Broken Mic Comedy presents, you know, Promote Might Be the album.
Okay.
So so the first part of the show was just our logo in the back. So when people took pictures, you know, the comics that was on stage before me, they had what you saw was them, and then the background was our Broken Mic Comedy logo.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then once that part of the show was basically, it was two shows. We took that set down, and then I had my set, which was the hashtag and the cassette tape.
Right.
And that was my joint there. But I wasn't really nervous. It was just one of those things like a graduation of relief.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know. You don't have the right people around you and you're not really in a good space and there's not no positivity going on in your life and stuff like that. You try to do something big, it's just another weigh on you. But if you're doing something big and you got the right people and, you know, like I remember talking to Randolph, like, hey man, you know how Randolph is. Randolph's like, oh, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You know, or you know, Andy, you talk to Andy and you know, Andy, he's like, hey, you'll be fine, man. Don't worry about it. We got you, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, we'll you know, he was like, if he's gonna be trash, we'll let you know. And we'll just delete it and we'll just you know.
yeah, they will let you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got people like that in your corner, you really can't lose.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And then, you know, those same people being able to celebrate with you when you have some sort of success
mm-hmm.
versus others when you reach some success, they're busy trying to. I used to use this analogy. There are people who always get all the bread,
mm-hmm.
But then when they see you get a crumb off that piece of bread, they look at you and try to figure out how'd you get that crumb.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah, you know? I totally get it, man. I understand.
Yeah, so it's like when somebody, instead of being like, oh man, you got that crumb? Yo, let's go. Let's put that crumb with this bread because we need all this to work together so mm-hmm. we can all eat.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's what it felt like. I don't know if I answered the question directly. I think I went around the world. But yeah.
I think you did. I know. That's a good answer. It's just like, I mean, that's an interesting thing that you bring up, because when you think about what's around you when you're doing stuff and the type of people yeah. you have around you, how all of that in your life contributes to, you know, your output, like when, especially when you're a performer. And then when you're if your headspace is cloudy, then sometimes maybe your performances are, or like if you're, you know, if you're an artist or what have you, because I think that is true. I think when you find your people, I think that's how you can, you know, truly begin to flourish. And then at the same time, if your life can be chaotic, and then when you get on stage, that can be the only time that you have solace, when you're able to, every life is like hard as shit. And then you get to like doing stand up, you know, sometimes I feel like when I perform, if I'm acting or I'm doing stand up or something, that's like the only time where I feel like I can be who I truly am to a certain degree, you yeah. know, and really, really try to, you know, I've always cherished it every time I'm on stage. But now, you know, losing it now, like when we're not able to do it, not able to perform and stuff, it is, you do appreciate it more. And we don't know if this is, it's going to take a long time for it to come back, you know, because we require people in our art form to be around yeah. us to make it happen. And I just think it's, I feel some kind of way about it happening. Fucking like with people trying to do this shit online, man. I don't know how you feel about it, but it's kind of weird. I get like maybe if you're helping people out, you're helping a club out, I get that. But just stand up at you know, maybe you see these personalities, these comics that you like, and have them be funny. That's different. But just straight up stand up, like in your living room where there's no audience, it's kind of.
Yeah, I don't want to make it normal. I haven't been invited to an online comedy show.
I would rather
every comedian start a podcast.
Yeah, that's what some are doing. Yeah, some people are starting podcasts and doing whatever.
I would rather every comedian start a podcast
mm-hmm.
and just do it that way versus doing trying to do a comedy show online, because you gotta look at it like this. We already have people, right? We already have the Instagram comedians, social media comedians, right?
Right.
Who aren't really stand-up comedians,
mm-hmm.
but they consider themselves comedians because they're doing videos, right?
Yeah.
Who are already merging into our lane.
Yeah.
Now that our lane has been basically put on the shelf for a little bit, now what you're doing is you're basically validating and going into these people's world, you know, and saying, okay, we're going to do a comedy show now online.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't want to make it normal, because if we start doing that, then what happens when it does become, what happens when the clubs do come back?
Yeah.
Then what are we doing? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to, it's like we're shit, because a lot of us collectively, like, with shit on these internet stars and stuff, but they know what they're doing. They're killing it. They're monetizing this stuff. They know how to make it happen. There's some that are trash. There's some that are very, very good. And every time you see them do stuff, it's like, it's quick, it's timely, and it's just funny as fuck. It's really good, dude. Like a lot of these people that are really funny at it, they, you know, so it is kind of weird when you see people, you see your colleagues trying to do stuff.
Yeah, I saw one last night. I did that for a little bit, and anyway, I mean, it was all right. And then what threw me off was she gave her the light, And since they were both on Instagram, I was like, oh man, that's behind the wall information. They're not supposed to, no one's supposed to know about the light.
Oh yeah.
They always don't know about the light. You don't give them to, don't even know about the light.
Yeah, I wonder how they do that. Or they just maybe send them a message like, you got the light. 2 minutes.
No, they basically like she gave her like the actual light.
And, oh, you know, really? Since y'all,
oh. Yeah, so like me and you right now on Instagram Live, right?
Uh-huh.
You're on top and you're on bottom, like, yeah. Screen wise, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, she went and gave her the light and she looked at it. And then she wrapped up her set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you know, and then that was it. But it was like, no, she had like maybe 33 people.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, 33 people on the live. But you know, once again, it's like, but how do you monetize that? Because, you know, once again, by doing this, you're basically giving away our particular art form away for free.
Yeah,
because you're fiending. And I mean, we all fiending. We all hurt.
Yeah.
I feel real bad for like the comics who are like 10 toes deep. I mean, and when you asked to do the podcast, and I was like, oh man, I thought you only acted in stand up. I know you had like an actual day job. I hope you take offense to that, but I was like,
No. Well, I mean, I actually don't take offense to it. I'm actually, oh, I didn't know that's nice of him to think that I made enough money by the gigs and that I get. No, but it's I mean, we talk about it a lot on this podcast, about having a day job, and like a lot of my colleagues, a lot of my friends have day jobs. And I think now it's sort of coming out, like even before the coronavirus, it was, you know, we were talking about like, you know, having a day job and doing this. Some people would try to say, oh, because you have a day job, you don't really appreciate the art form that much. You're not sacrificing everything to do your art. And I was like, no, that's bullshit. In order to do my art, I kind of have you to do the road. You have to have money.
Yeah, you have to.
You have to have money to like, and you know, we talk about, and then I kind of see this. I see some comics saying, hey, stop, don't make fun of us for trying to do online comedy shows. And I'm like, that doesn't, just because you miss it, it just because I don't want to do an online comedy show doesn't mean that I don't miss it as much as you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I've done gigs. I think I've talked about it. I don't even remember when that was. I did a New Year's Eve gig a couple years ago. I think going into 20, I might've been going into 2019, where it was like a random thing. It was a couple $100 and I didn't want to go. They weren't giving me a hotel. And I was like, well, I want the stage time. I want to do this gig. So I had to get a hotel, you know. I wasn't going to drive after midnight in fucking upstate New York to get back to Jersey for 2.5 hours. I'm not doing that shit. But yeah. I wanted to do the gig, and I had a good time. That cost money. I didn't make any money off that gig. You know what I mean? So it's like, don't you fucking tell me, dude. You know, everybody's so, you know, everybody's, you know, we all, I don't do it. I try not to do that shit online, but like, so, just everybody's so fucking super virtuous online, like they care about their craft. And, you know, people know I care about it because my fucking material's good.
Yeah.
That's how I show I care.
Yeah, like, and I'm like, I mean, actually, you think about it, we sacrifice more because, you know, I was telling my wife this. I'm like, and I was telling a couple of my friends, I was like, look, like, I'm okay with, you know, just being at home and working from home.
Yeah.
For the next couple of months, because before this, I was out in the streets 4 to 5 days a week doing shows. And like getting home at like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and then having to be up again by like 8.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
To do an 8-hour shift and then no breaks, getting off, no breaks, changing my clothes and going to, you know, going to the show. When I did the Dan Soda show.
Yeah.
I did the set at the Improv. It was Thursday, 2 shows Friday, 2 shows Saturday. Thursday, I left work. At 5:30, I was at the DC Improv by 5:45, you know, 6 o'clock, because it was around the corner.
Yeah.
And He did that one show, and then again on Friday, I'm like, so we're all giving, you know, sacrificing something for the art,
right,
art form in some way, you know. And we know we can have that debate on who's sacrificing more,
right?
I mean, but you know, but at the end of the day, we're all giving out something,
right?
The ones who have went 10 toes deep, if you know, if we're being assholes about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Like,
well, that's what you get for going 10 toes deep. Look at me with my job, right?
Well, yeah, you know, it's dude, it's something, man. It's for you, it's fortunate, you know. I bitch about my jobs a lot sometimes, and but at the same time, you know, I'm glad to have it, blessed, and all that stuff. But it's just, it's one of those things where it's like you have to do what you have to do to survive. And I would think about like the best days as a person that works, has a day job and is pursuing the fine arts. It's like the best day for me would be like you book a weekend at the club, you know, your home club, you're opening for somebody. And it's like, okay, well, you're doing the show Thursday. Maybe you get off Friday. Maybe you put in a PTO day to be off on Friday so you don't have to get up. And then that's like, it's the shit, dude. Like, it's the, that's like the best. Like, I appreciated those things. And I've been doing that. You kind of think, like, I've been running like this for like 12 years now, like almost like 11 or 12 years. And it's just like, I was thinking, and I was doing a show on Broadway that would have opened last week. And I was thinking, how the fuck am I going to do all this? And then it gets taken away, and it gets taken away, and just like, well, you know, I'm missing out on being on Broadway. I'm missing out on this bread, extra bread that would help me out. But it's like, well, maybe things kind of needed to slow down, but not, you don't want it to have to slow down in this way where people are fucking dying every day.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, you don't want that, but it's crazy, dude. It's people, like celebrities are dying. There's people that you know, their fam. It's wild, dude. It's really scary. Yeah,
it's it's not even getting better.
No,
it's not even getting better. It's like getting, you know, it's getting worse before it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and my main thing has always been like, how to get the celebrities and like these basketball players, I'm like, yo, how does everybody get these tests, but my cousin who has symptoms, can't get a test? How do they get this test?
I'd say that it's because the celebrities, they're better than us, Mike. We should have worked harder, man. They're better than us.
Like, how do they get this test? How do they, you know, like, how do they have access to this test? But I was in the shower. I made a post about this on Instagram, and I have a really ratchet playlist during the shower.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a few songs that's everything, like I might listen to like 2 Chainz and like the Rowdy Hood, and then like Total will come on my playlist. It's a random playlist. I work out with it and everything, right?
Yeah.
So I'm in the shower minding my business, and it was about a couple of days ago, and then the Commodores come on. Jesus Is Love comes on. Just randomly comes on while I'm in the shower.
Uh-huh.
And, so I took a screen, you know, I mean to get out of the shower real quick. You know, like I took a screenshot, and I just made a post on Instagram. I was like, hey, man, I joke a lot with God, but he made me this way. And this is a message. I mean, this is a sign, like, yo, we all gonna be straight. We just got to go through this a little bit. There's a reason for everything.
Yeah.
You might be scared, but hey, we're all going to be fine. Some of us.
Some, I know, dude. Yeah, man. It's shit, you know, man. Yeah, it's, you know, just, it's getting, like, I watched the news for like a good half an hour, 45 minutes, like at the local news, and then I just try to turn on, I just cut it off, turn on a podcast or something, because, you know, then my homies, everybody that's podcasting, you know, we're all talking about it, but I mean, there's got to be some levity amidst all this, the whole crisis and everything, because it is like the homie Rod from the Black Guy Who Tips. It's like a lot of disasturbation. Like it's very bad, but at the same time, it's just like I can't constantly be watching it. It just becomes more and more depressing, man.
Yeah, you got the you know, everybody has a press conference now. I was good with with New York,
Cuomo. New York
I'm good with Cuomo. But then now you got your boy. Now he's doing his press conference, and he's doom and gloom about everything. He was doom and gloom about his inauguration, so I don't even know why they was hoping that he was going to be able to bring some sunlight.
Oh, he's not.
And you know, so that all these are press conferences. I watch the news, but you know, I think I just watch MSNBC. I watch Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'm like, okay, I just get my news from Rachel Maddow. I might watch a little bit of like Morning Joe to the other lady, Katie. Okay, Vashia Rule.
Okay, I don't think I know her.
Yeah, she's right after Morning Joe. She's like the very next show.
Okay.
But yeah, I watch her for the stock market, and I had a couple of bucks in the stock market. I ain't got that much. A couple of hundred, and and I see, yeah, it's literally like $200 or $300. I just dabble in it just to say I dabble in it.
No doubt.
It just to see if I, because she talks, she do is talk about stocks, and I just see where the money should be going at, and then I just flip my money around real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
I bought some Spirit Airlines stock because it was like $7 a share, and I went and I bought like maybe like 20 shares.
Okay.
And it's up to, it went up to the high, at the high, went up to like 15, and now it's back down to like 10 or 11. But then, so I pulled my money out of that and I moved it to this other stock, which is MUR, Murphy's Oil. And that's at $6.29 a share, only because I just looked at it before we started talking. And I bought a few shares of that. And their high is like maybe $58 a share. But they're an oil company, oil-based company, MUR, and then Spirit Airlines is SAVE. For those who, if you're into stocks, that's the code you got to put there.
Okay.
To buy shares. And yeah, so I mean, but outside of that, it's just too much doom and gloom. I just be on the sticks. I play with my kids.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Like, so I want to get to that. Your family, are you guys at your each other's throats, or what's going on with that?
Nah, not at all, man. If anything, they're more tiptoeing around me because, like I said, I'm never home. I'm home maybe 2 or 3 days a week. So
okay.
they're worried about me like losing it. And it's, you know, it's my kids and my wife and it's my sister-in-law. But we're just having fun, man. I'm enjoying this time with them, especially with my daughter. She's 10, and she will be 10 times better than I ever will be. And anything as far as entertainment, because she just naturally has it, like comedically acting, creativity, all of that. She is just 10 times better than me, like, ever.
Okay.
And I got her on TikTok, and she do her little TikTok dances and her little TikTok.
I did see one of those videos. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and she's just, you know. There's another one. I haven't posted it. I saved it though. I haven't posted it yet. But like, it's the one where you freeze it and then you change to a different outfit, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, she has like so much attitude into it, you know. And it's like, you're already better than me. And I just want to kind of like cultivate. I'm able to help like mold that, cultivate that, and be like, you should do this, or hey, do something real quick. We do podcasts together and stuff like that. Spending more time with my son. Because you know, you got, when it comes to boys, you really got to be around the boys.
Black dads,
black dads, yo. And spend time with my wife, man. We work out. We work out a lot together. I do Fit Body Boot Camp, and basically do different challenges, like 28-day challenge, a 6-week challenge, and then they do and they have an actual membership, and it's basically like a like Sally Struthers or whatever, where you have a coach. Who's coaching you on how to work, you know, working out, and you do like 30 minute hit high intensity interval workout trainings. Hit training is like 30, 35 minutes. And we work out together. She lost 20 plus pounds already. She started last year around October, and I saw the results, and she been trying to get me to do it because I was just going to the gym playing basketball. And I would just do chest exercises, try to get my man boobs up. And I started doing the fit body and just the 20, I did the 20 day challenge. And in 20 days, I've lost 5 pounds at 3.3% body fat. And I'm doing the 6 week challenge now. And I lost a total of 10 pounds working with them. And I'm at 260 and I'm a hair away from to the 250s, which I haven't seen before I broke my ankle. So,
oh, good for you, dude.
Yeah. So we're just literally just, I mean, we're just like spending this time, man. This is a lot of time to spend, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why I was like, oh, I'm perfectly fine. I'm good. You know, I haven't put on jeans or anything. Or shoes in a long time. I'm wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt and a fitted cap. And I'm probably going to bald my head since my barbershop is closed. And I'll ride this out.
Can you shape your? Can you? Because I have clippers, but I'm not gonna take any. I used to shave my hair, but I don't think I'm gonna do that anymore. But I just like shape myself up and my beard a little bit.
Yeah, I have the whole barbershop kit. I thought I go in and out of hobbies real quick.
Yeah.
So you know, like I wanted to learn how to cut my own hair just in case something like this would happen.
Did you do that in the military? Cut hair, or did you just?
Just something I wanted to do.
No, I'm just saying, like, did you guys cut each other's hair when you were in service?
Oh no! I tried. Funny story. So I tried to do that one time.
Yeah.
I tried to cut somebody's hair. And I messed up the, oh man, I fucked the head up.
Oh, oh man. I know you felt mortified, right?
I did. Dude was like, no, I look better than what it would have been, right? But it was during AIT, and who was at Fort Lee, Virginia.
Okay.
92 Yankee was my MOS. And, but yeah, so the reason I brought it up was AIT is because this was the, this is like the part of boot camp where you get weekend passes, where you get to go on the weekends and, you know, basically hang out with chicks.
Yeah.
You know,
what branch were you? What branch were you in?
Oh, Army.
Army. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And, my God, I felt this dude hairline up and I'm like, man, you don't want to mess with no women right now. Not like this. Not with your hair like this. And then and like, who was in the same unit? And he'd be standing beside me. And I was like, and I had to look at him. I was like, man, I did this. I did this, man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Damn, man.
And it takes you know, you have a bad haircut, man. Them joints take forever to grow. I'm like, man, please grow back. Please grow back so you'll get your haircut.
What kind of haircut was it? Was it something that he could have cut off? Like, could he have gone bald or? Or what?
Yeah, he could have just cut it all off.
And he didn't want to cut it off?
Yeah. I don't think that was even an option. I don't think at the time we even thought about cutting it off.
Damn.
Like, let's just cut it all off. It was just like one of those things where it was just like I cut it and then cause I was trying to do like the taper fade.
Oh shit, took, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the half fade where you know you faded it.
Mm-hmm.
And
like,
yeah.
Like the Grant Hill or Jalen Rose.
I was going for it, yo, and one side was higher than the other.
Yeah. Oh shit. Man, I know people used to met like when I was in high school. I kind of did it in they did it in junior high a little more so high school, but people used to make if your shit wasn't good, they would fucking light your ass up. Look at your shape up, nigga. Because we wore uniforms, and the only way you could kind of show your personality was with your haircut or like. Maybe your sneakers, like we could wear black sneakers, you know, like you kind of flex in a certain way. But yeah, if your haircut was fucked up, dude, like, oh my God, like, especially if you went to like a black school, like my, dude.
So you from New York?
I'm from PG. I'm from PG County. But I got people down in like I kind of consider you like, a homie anyway, because you're from Virginia. You're from Virginia Beach, right?
Yeah, Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk. So like my uncle was all over that area, but he's now in Newport News. He was in the God, where was he, a Marine or was he Army? Oh fuck, I should know that. Ugh. He was in service and he was stationed in Fort Eustis. He was you know, Newport News. He's all over that area in Virginia. And so I know it a little bit. I just knew in Virginia, like in that area, you guys would get all the stores before we would, to a certain degree. It just seems like you just had more shit. Like, you guys had at one point, this was like five years ago, there was a Fuddruckers down there that had like a, God, what did they have? I did the Virginia Beach Funny Bone, and I did the what's the one in Richmond Funny Bone with, yeah, I was opening for Paul Verzi on like some off nights, and we were down there, and then I after that I went to see my uncle in Newport News, and we went out to this Fuddruckers that was like different. Like, you would order your food. Like, at Fuddruckers is my favorite burger place. You order your food at the register. That's how they always used to be. And then they call you up to get your food. But this one had like a waiter, and it was like all different and shit. It's like a fancy schmancy Fuddruckers. I just remember that. Shoot. And then they had, you guys had different stores that we didn't have. It seemed like you had more of a selection of stores, like a Blockbuster Music. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Lots of have you ever done the Williamsburg Comedy Club inside of that DoubleTree?
No, I haven't done any. I'll be honest with you. When it comes to my hometown, I always bomb.
You always bomb?
I always bomb. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about my hometown where when I go there and I bomb miserably.
Oh,
I did Kazi's.
I've heard of that place. I never performed there.
That might be what you're talking about. You said Williamsburg, right?
It wasn't Kazi's. It was like the comedy club of Williamsburg. And it was like, I did it like, I want to say it was like Memorial Day. It was Memorial Day weekend. I just remember a lot of pancake houses. It was, it was inside a DoubleTree. I remember riffing on that, making fun of them for all the pancake houses and shit. But it was fun. Like, I think it was like a 90-minute show. Like, we had like two or three comics that did, excuse me, we had an MC, and then it was me and Jimmy Merritt actually did two shows. One night he closed it out. One night I closed it out. It was fun. But I just remember just a lot of fucking pancake houses. I never even went to one.
We got a lot of them. We had a lot of those. I just remember they used to call us Baby New York.
Really?
They used to call us Baby New York, like our area, because just because the way we dress. A lot of our fashion came from New York.
Okay.
And then, you know, we had a lot of Navy cats that was coming down. Actually, last night, it was funny. We was doing this online podcast or this little game show that me and my friend Kareem do online. And I think I brought up, because I wanted, we was doing brackets. And I was shooting to get Player, the R&B group, into the bracket over Troop. Because no one knew who Troop was. And my friend was like, no, Player, don't nobody know Player. Like, Player came from Virginia Beach. Everybody knows Player.
They were fucking great, dude.
And I was trying to tell her, right? And then somebody got on the thread, on the chat. It was like, if you take all the Navy people out of Norfolk, there would be no Navy, there would be no Black people in Norfolk. I'm like, I take offense to that. I was born and raised. Okay?
Oh, wow.
We are real. People die in Norfolk, okay? We got a high murder rate.
that's a fucked up reason to claim that. I would just consider that. I mean, because we're kind of everywhere. When you look at the major, if you look at like the major cities and stuff, we're there, and especially in the South, like Virginia, like we're all over Virginia. Granted, there's certain spots like where you're just like, oh yeah, this is different. But for the most part, if you're off like 95 or 85, like we're gonna be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just kind of have more of a kinship with like Virginia and North Carolina, because that's where a lot of my family is and stuff. But Yeah, that's I would never think that.
Yeah, I'm like, yo, you got the 757, you got the 760, which they try to change. I think they changed the area code to like 968 or something. They're changing the area code off of the 757. But you know, it's like for me, it's the 7 cities.
Mm-hmm.
You have Richmond.
Yeah,
that's it. There's some parts in between. Mm-hmm. You got Williamsburg and everything else, right?
Yeah.
But all your black people are going to be either in the 757. You got 7 cities, Richmond. That's it. You know, then after that, there's Northern Virginia, and then there's that other part of Virginia that nobody wants to be in because that's Trump country.
Yeah, that's a different part. Yeah, it's like where you're just driving down there. You're like there's civilization. There's Northern Virginia where it's obviously you know we all know about that. That's the government. Everybody, there's diversity and all that stuff, but. Once you get past Richmond, it's kind of sketchy to a certain degree. You know, it's, I definitely know. I know about that. And then for the most part, those people aren't really fucking with you. But then at the same time, every time my dad had a new car and we were going down there, he'd always get pulled over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do you got? I don't know. But it seems like there's more of a sprawl. I was down there in December of last year, driving down to my uncle passed away in December and right before Christmas. And driving down, like every time I'm down there, it had been 3 years, but like there's just more of a sprawl. There's more stuff, more like restaurants and stores, and it's become more and more like, I guess, developed. I don't know the other word to say.
They're building up their malls and stuff.
Yeah, and
they're taking down the tree line and putting up casinos.
Yeah, it's like maybe more. I guess it's good if it means more people are getting jobs and stuff. But then, like, I noticed it. My test case was like Waldorf, Maryland, because I remember when I was 13, this had to be like 1993, when I was like 12 or 13 years old, I remember going down to Waldorf to St. Charles Town Center. I don't know if you're familiar with that, with Charles County at all, but I remember it used to be just like a mall, and you know, you go down there sometimes. And then like maybe 15, 20 years later, it's just so much traffic down Route 5 and it's insane. It takes a longer time to get there. My dad and I went down there. We went to Sam's Club around Christmas time, like getting groceries and stuff. And we didn't even go down that far, but you could just tell like there's more shopping centers, more stores, and it's just so much more congested. And then like, I guess a lot of black people had moved down there too. Cause you'd see more black people. We'd be everywhere, man, especially in Maryland, DC, Maryland, and Virginia. DC, would you say DC's more white?
Yeah.
They came back into the city like that Chappelle joke and shit.
Yeah. My grandmother, I don't know all the in-law ranks.
Uh-huh.
my great grandmother-in-law, let's say that, she lives off H, is it H Street or I Street? Whatever street it is, it's like that street that was famous for destroying our own shit. I want to say it's I Street. Long story short, it was a one-way street. You know, she stayed off a one-way street, whatever. You couldn't go different directions. It's over there where the place that is closed, where they were selling all the fish.
Okay. I don't know, dude. You live there.
Okay, cool. I was looking for some backup.
No, dude. I've been away. Oh, God. Yeah. When I graduated.
You know about this spot, though, because the fish place, they a fish sandwich, you get like 7 fillets.
Is it by the wharf or something?
No, it's off. I want to say it's off I Street, off H Street.
I don't know DC that well.
Okay, I'm about to. Yeah, I'm looking it up right now
Okay.
because I feel oh man, it's there it is. Closing of iconic Horse and Dickies. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. She stayed literally around the corner for Horse and Dickies. So I've been around for that long. And
Yeah.
once gentrification started happening, the first thing they did was they tore down a couple of buildings around her house. And they built up this big ass apartment complex. Right. Then the streets changed. The streets went from, being one way to now you can go both ways. You know,
Yeah.
you go up the road, down the road, start seeing more white people running. The houses around her. She had
Yeah.
like three or four houses around her, right? White people now white people are moving into those houses.
Now,
They gutted it
is your
out.
grandmother still there?
Yeah, she still lives there.
Okay, so they didn't try to move her out or anything, or oh, that's good.
Not yet. They just with it, and maybe they have. I think somebody did try to, like, yo, we'll buy you out. And
Okay.
she's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like, nah, I'm good.
I saw an
And cousin
August
it.
Wilson play like that right before the virus shut everything down, like in last month, February actually. This play called Radio Golf. It takes place in Pittsburgh, but it's happening everywhere. I mean, like one of my favorite MCs, Odyssey, he had a song that made me take notice to him. This was like maybe 2007 or 2008. It was just like he had this song called Gentrification. And I was like, damn. I was like, that's a dope ass record. And he's talking about some real shit. And that's when I started noticing it, because I don't know, like my listeners know, but I didn't really get to know DC that well, because by the time I was old enough to hang out, I was already gone. So I was like living in Chicago, and you know, you'd go out, you know, I'd go out there, and then doing shows in DC would just be like, you know, like the Draft House is technically, it's Virginia, you know, and then, you know, just doing shows there and some of the little spots here and there in DC. But yeah, it is. I noticed it a lot in Chicago, where I was doing this play out there on the South Side, like near the Ida B. Wells projects. And you kind of hear that's supposed to be like, that's the hood, this is this and it's that. And we were going to a White Castle after rehearsal or something. And you would see how it would be really hood in one spot, and then a couple blocks over it's just like really nice. You see a white woman jogging, and like that's how she, like, it's the same shit. Like that's how it starts to change, and you're just like, oh shit. And then they call it a new neighborhood and all that shit.
It's a gradual change. I was telling my friends this enough because my aunt had passed away last year, maybe last year, 2 years ago. She was like the last aunt
Okay.
of her generation,
Damn.
and she stayed in the pro and she stayed in this place called Cary Park. Cary Park Projects, and the significance of it was across the street is Jean Park. Jean Park, Cary Park, Tidewater Park. So it's all these parks, right? And then maybe 4 miles, 5 miles away is the Norfolk Scope and the Hampton Coliseum. And then beside the Hampton Col not the Col Hampton Coliseum, Chrysler Hall. And then it's the they just built the MacArthur Mall.
Okay.
Okay. So when my aunt passed away last year, whatever, they was like, yeah, we got to do it. And I didn't know they had a homeowners association in the projects. I didn't know that they
Wow.
have meetings. I
That's
didn't know
okay. All right.
that. And they were like, yeah, we about to have a meet because they trying to tear down the projects, and they going to build it back up. And I was like, yo, they're not building it up for y'all. This is
Wow.
it. Y'all are done. I was on Facebook and my friends was talking about, they did turn down the project and they're like, good, because I'm like, no, y'all not understanding. If y'all we need to put our money together right now, get you like two or three good investors and buy this property up, because what's about to happen is a Starbucks is gonna happen, and then you're gonna see some random woman run around with a poodle. And then it's done.
Yeah.
It's over. And like I said, they're trying to change the area code from like 757 to like 968. And I'm like, yo, how do you change the iconic
Trying to change the stigma and shit.
area
Like,
code?
yeah, that's, yeah, man. It's been, I just know, like, that's kind of like the last like 10 to 15 years it's been like that, man. And you just, you see it in New York too. Like you see it in like from just like doing shows, like since like I started in 09 and like I remember going to Long Island City where, you know, you just go do a spot or something at the creek or whatever. And then you, then you like, oh, there's parking. I can, you can always find parking. 2 or 3 years later, it's like, I got to park in a garage now. Like, with shit is popping like this. Like, damn. And they got all these eateries and stuff coming up and every, like restaurants and these high rises they're putting up. And it's like, oh shit. And then like everything is kind of becoming Brooklyn. And then like Williamsburg, my listeners know this, but I always call it like, I always call Williamsburg like NBA All-Star Weekend for white people because it's just it's just popping. I like and I'm not going front. I liked visiting. Like I would go see shows there, like concerts, music shows, or whatever. You know, you do mm-hmm. you do a spot somewhere. You go to a little restaurant. It's fun, but you know, it's just like it can just be so congested. It's like, well, I don't know. Like you get all these people that move to New York to find culture, to follow their dreams and all this stuff. You move from all over the country, but then mm-hmm. you try to turn it into anywhere USA. Like it's losing its culture. It's just kind of like, does there need to be a Target on the Lower East Side? You know what I mean? Somebody was telling me there's a Target there. I don't know if that's true. Maybe it's like one of those little, you know, smaller. I don't know, but that's fucking weird, dude.
Yeah, I say it's a slow, gradual change, but it really happens fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening so slow and it's fast because you see it, and before you get a chance to really like digest what's happening,
yeah,
it's over.
Right. Yeah.
It's like when they changed Harlem. What was it? They changed Harlem to like Soto? Shoho?
Some bullshit. I don't even remember, dude. I don't remember what they call it, but it's definitely like I've shot a couple TV shows and stuff out there, and it's like I remember one time I tried to get, like, I'm on my fat boy moves. Like, I tried to get a chopped cheese. You ever had a chopped cheese? You ever heard of that? It's a New York sandwich. Like, it's basically chopped up ground beef, and you put it in a bun, and you can get like fixings like mayo, cheese, and whatever you want on it. Really, it's like a New York. I don't know if you call it delicacy, but it's a New York based sandwich that Desus and Mero talked about. And one of my homies, shout out to Damian Lemon, I was like, yo, where's the best spot to get a chopped cheese? And he told me where to go. And after a show, I was like, I'm going to get myself a chopped cheese sandwich. And I tried to go. I couldn't find any parking, man. I couldn't find any parking. I tried to park in a lot and I went to this lot. He's like, no more parking. But then I saw him park a white woman's car and then he wouldn't let me park. I was like, all right, dude. All right, bro. And it was another person of color. He was not black. And I was like, oh, okay. You let the white girl get a parking spot. All right, man. So you can't let me. I was going to drop 10 or 15 bucks to park there for 20 minutes or so. But he couldn't, you know, whatever. But I ended up going another night after a spot. And it was okay. It was an okay sandwich. But it's just so crazy and congested that it's, you know, I don't know, man, but not anymore, dude.
Yeah. So hey, real quick, this is funny. I think, so I was Googling my album, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think somebody just went and, they leaked my album.
They leaked it already? How'd they do that?
I googled my album, right? It is on Pinterest. It says download zip RA Mike B promote Mike B album leak MP3, and it's from Haley Lotry. It's probably a bot or whatever. And I'm looking at the link, and they got like comments. Like somebody said, I'm looking at the comments. Somebody said, here's the link searching for this album myself, found only on this file share. And it's about, like, I've been waiting for this album for a long time, but this is somebody from like 2016.
Hmm.
Somebody's like, but it requires a CC. Thanks, CC, just to make sure you aren't a bot. Thank you guys, waiting for this album a long time. By the way, quality is HQ, different formats, MP3, M4A for iPhone. It's rarely the best file sharing. Oh man, that's great. Thank solid website, enter CC, just download, wait and see. Topic closed, download this file.
Damn, already.
Yeah, right, man. So y'all take it, y'all just gonna take my $9.99 away from me.
Guys, buy hashtag promote Mike B. Buy that shit. iTunes, Apple, we'll talk about, we'll plug it. iTunes, Amazon.
Yeah.
Let's close it out by talking about, you mentioned you get on the sticks. You're a PS4 guy. You mentioned, when I was listening to the album, you mentioned Division, and I was like, that guy's a gamer.
Yeah, I'm on Division. I play Grand Theft Auto a lot with my friends. And we have this thing. We get on like every night around maybe like 9. Probably be on for like 9 to like midnight, maybe 12 or whatever. And well, that's still midnight. And I'm on that, Grand Theft Auto, Division, and NBA 2K20.
That's got to be fun. My friends suck up here, dude. Like, I'm going to name names. Brian McGinnis and Jeff Cerulli, both funny comics. They're telling me, oh, dude, you got to get Madden so we could play together. Those fuckers never, you know, invite me or anything. So I see them making videos about, oh, look what I did to Jeff. So, you know, they suck. And then Brian, this fucker, everybody knows that I'm excited about The Last of Us Part 2 coming out. And we just found out right before we got on the call that they delayed it. I think, I haven't read any articles yet, but it's possibly to September. It was supposed to come out February 21st, got pushed to May 29th. Now, 4 months later to 5 months later to September. And people are texting me. Brian texts me. He's like, oh, you, I was like, I know, dude. I know. Everybody's trying to break the news to me and shit. It's like, don't do that shit. I know. I fucking know. You think I don't know? Do they think that I don't have Naughty Dog on, what's the little bell you click on Twitter? Alert when they tweet? But I'm taking my anger out on them, really. It's just, I fucking don't think at this point it's ever coming out.
Yeah. It's going to be a while, man. I don't know how we're going to... Yeah, life ain't gonna be the same again. They start releasing movies from the that's supposed to like come out every day. They just went on ahead and released them onto the world.
I just saw Tom Cruise tweet about Top Gun. It's not gonna come out till maybe December. I think he just tweeted. He don't even tweet, and that shit was supposed to come out in another month or two. Now it's coming out like later on this year. I've gotten that Ben Affleck movie. I saw that in the theater. But I did buy it because I really liked that movie, The Way Back, and I got it so my dad could actually watch it from Amazon Prime, and I got Bad Boys so he could watch that too.
Well, how'd you like it, Bad Boys 3?
I enjoyed it, man. The ending, the shit with his son was a little fucking weird, and then they're going to try to fucking make another one with him.
Yeah.
I didn't like that shit, but you know, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, two of my heroes, man, growing up, you know.
Yeah.
So it was
Martin
good
is
to
the reason Martin is the reason why I got into comedy.
Same for me.
Well, Gallagher was the first comedian I ever seen. Martin was the
Wait, yeah. okay. All right, hold on. Let's talk about Gallagher. I love Martin Lawrence because my listeners know he was the first guy. He's from Landover, Maryland, and loved his shit, talking shit. The first joint, all his stuff. But Gallagher, how'd you end up at a Gallagher show? How old were you?
Oh no! I went to the Gallagher show. I grew up with my grandparents and my grandma. She had very strict rules, and my granddad had very strict rules where I couldn't watch anything with like cussing and stuff like that. So I didn't watch HBO. I didn't really watch Def Jam until I was like well into my teens, like probably like 19, 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I could watch Comedy Central. And I just remember during the weekends, they will always have a Gallagher marathon.
Damn.
So I'm just seeing this white guy in the middle of, you know, smashing watermelons and making people laugh on stage, you know, taking it back to the 60s and, you know, that whole, his whole catalog at that time. And he just had auditoriums full of people making them laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's what opened up my eyes to it. And then it went from that to like watching the Gary Shandling show.
Oh yeah.
When he used to leave on a golf cart at the end, he used to roll out of the golf cart. And that's when I started catching all the black shows, you know, like Martin and Living Single. And then one day that's when I went to my friend's house, Lisa, and she had You So Crazy.
Mm.
No. Yeah. It was You So Crazy. The very first joint. And we used to watch that on repeat. I'm like, yo, put that tape there, yo, and watch this.
You had to watch it over there because you weren't going to get to see it at your place.
Yeah. And we're just watching on repeat over and over again. So that's like my introduction to comedy was Gallagher transformed and morphing over into Martin.
Yeah. That's cool.
So.
And you started in Virginia, right?
Yeah. I started here in D.C.
Oh, in D.C.
I when I got out the Army,
mm-hmm.
When I came out from Iraq, the first thing I did was I moved up to D.C. to be with my fiance now wife.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's downstairs being a hater. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up real fast.
Yeah, we can wrap it up. Yeah.
Yeah, she comes up and being a creep. Whatever.
You're about to get in trouble. I don't want you to get in trouble, man.
I ain't worried about it. It ain't like we're going anywhere. So I moved up here to be with her, and then she had to do a little trip over. She had to do a work trip for a couple of months, and so I was bored, and I googled a comedy class.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go to comedy school. Like, how do you even get into this?
Yeah,
and that's when I didn't think I could do it in Norfolk because I didn't know any comedians in Norfolk. I didn't think you could do it in Norfolk. It was that stigma. Then I found out Angus Black, who's like big. And Norfolk, you know, was a comedian.
Okay.
So I started off there, and I googled the DC Improv comedy class, and I couldn't afford it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I found this other one called All Stars Comedy Class. It was like $25 a session with Dave Tullis, the first white man ever to perform on Def Jam.
Okay. Was he your mentor? One of them.
He was my very first mentor. Yeah, he was the very first one. I paid $25, and my introduction to him was, "Hey man, you want a drink?" And I was like, "Nah." He was like, "Well, I'm gonna take a drink." And he poured a glass of vodka. I mean, a full glass of vodka into a glass, and just a tablespoon of pineapple juice.
Wow, Jesus Christ!
And he later passed on, but he gave me some jewels
mm-hmm.
along the way, But that's where I got my start at All Stars Comedy Club, and he was a real good guy. He was a funny dude. He was like, because his claim to fame was that Little Caesars joke, where instead of saying pizza pizza, his punchline was pussy pussy, and he got a bunch of endorsements off of that. Yeah,
that's cool. And so you started in D.C.
Yeah, I started in D.C.
And then just doing the shows and all that.
I started in D.C. And then and the funny thing is, when I started in D.C., I started in D.C., but I only did that one club for like two, 3 years. I didn't go to any other spots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere else. I was raised old school, so you know the saying, yo, keep your suck in one area. So if you suck, don't be spread like suck around.
Trying to hone your craft. Okay, I get it. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, you keep your suck in one place, and I just kept it at that one club, yo.
When did you start branching out? How many years in? When did you start? What year did you start?
I started in 2010.
Okay. Yeah. So we've been doing it around the same time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I started in 2010, and then when they closed, All-Star Scholar Club closed around 2012, 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what forced me to have to go to other spots.
Yeah.
And I did what every new comic does when they, instead of venturing off, I started my own mic.
Okay. Well, that's how you meet people, though.
Yeah, I started my own mic, and that's actually the first time I met, like, Tim Miller.
Yeah.
And I met a few other people just by doing the mic, and I remember I was hosting. I never hosted before. So I'm just hosting this, you know, I'm just doing a terrible job hosting.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember Tim Miller was next.
And he shitted
like,
on you?
Just bring me on. He was like, bring me on stage now. Hurry up. I was doing this long, unnecessary introduction. He was just like, just bring me on stage.
Oh,
and
shit.
I told him about it. We talked about that on the last time. Me and him was on the Three Guys On podcast about how he basically just, you know, he tore me a new one.
Yeah.
Taking too long for bringing him on stage. And it was fun.
I love Tim. He's the guy that kind of brought me into the fold in that DC area community, because he was telling me, he had told me about the, did you ever do the green room at the Draft House?
Yeah, that's how I met. Well, I already knew about Randolph and Andy.
Uh-huh.
But they're the ones that brought me into that fold.
Yeah, yeah. I fucking love that place, dude. I'm so sad that it's gone.
Yeah, I missed that green room. That's where I really started honing what I was doing.
Yeah.
And then
you have to stand out there, and then at the like you for the open mic, and then because to me, like, I always envied you DC guys, because I would say Saturday night, that's a show, dude. That's a show. Like that's a real crowd. There's all civilians, and that's a show. Like, you got to be on your shit. So like, yeah, if that was New York, huh?
So you can't bull drive out there.
No, not at all, not at all. Like, that was like showtime. Because I remember like not getting booked in New York City and coming down and just working at the, you know, working in there. And then when they used to do like the showcase shows on Fridays, where you could do like 15 or 20, they give you free food, they give you pizza and wings and shit like that. That was the shit, man. I love that place.
Yeah, man.
I hope the big room comes back. I haven't performed there in years, like maybe like 3 or 4 years.
The main room,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why I joke about, I was like, yo, if I end up hosting for you, you end up getting your own TV show. Because
mm-hmm.
I hosted for Little Rail, and uh-huh. then he ended up having his own show.
Uh-huh.
And then I opened up for Robbie, and then his show went on Hulu.
His show was amazing.
Best selling. So I opened up for a lot of people I wouldn't have opened up for.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have known me if it wasn't for you know, that main room.
Yeah, that's and, how you get to that's yeah, and that's a great room, man. Yeah, I love that place. So you're a gamer. Are you into anything else that's coming? Are you a nerd? Like, I don't think you're a nerd like me about that stuff.
No, I'm not really, like, my friends, they're all into like games and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I do 3 games a year now. Actually, it's just 1 game a year now. I used to be WWE.
Okay.
Madden, and then NBA.
That's pretty much. I'm a 2K guy. I was trying to start a season. I started a season with the Mystics. I got my ass kicked, dude. Because I don't play that much, and I don't know those women's teams like that. But I like the Mystics, you know.
They're pretty good though. They got
Deladon and the Tolliver, the point guard, and Natasha Cloud. I mean, I know them, but yeah, I just need to get back into, because I don't play it as much as I should. You know, I got a PS4 Pro to get ready for this Last of Us. And since that's not coming out until maybe later on this year, I got this. They did have a sale going on. They had this game called Control. That's a third person shooter type game. So I'm going to get into that and maybe some other stuff. But yeah, dude, like it's. I don't I love video games, but I don't play them that much. Because it used to be, I think the last 7 or 8 years, I think it started for me By like 2013 when the Tomb Raider reboot came out, and then I started getting back into some of these third person games. But
Yeah, man. It was all sports with me. I just restarted my MyPlayer. My first MyPlayer was trash, so he had no defense.
Do you get caught up in that stuff with like you getting earning all these points and having to fucking build them up? And do you buy that virtual currency stuff?
I have caught myself doing it.
I think that's how, because that's why, like, sometimes on YouTube, like, that's another rabbit hole, dude. That's another one where I was like, oh, I can see how people get caught up in this. And I think a lot of younger people, like a lot of younger kids, they really get into, like, you can get like $100,000 of VC if you pay $50. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I just want to play the game. I just like, let me be LeBron. I'll just be LeBron, you know? But I guess it's like an RPG. It's like that's their version of a role-playing game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I need my own player.
Wow, that's,
I need my own player. I'm out there.
How much have you spent?
I probably spent maybe 150.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, I don't go overboard. Like I said, I had the one player, and that came with the game. VC, the original amount of VC came with the game. I normally use the VC that I earned during the games.
Right, right.
You know, and I do that, but because I have the I started over from scratch. I did it. I tried to do it with a big man,
mm-hmm.
and he was too slow. So I erased him, okay. So that I have a small forward who has LeBron like skills, but doesn't have exactly like LeBron, no jumper, and he has a bit of enough strength yet to take the contact on the inside yet.
Right.
But he's super effective on a defensive end, and I spent. Maybe like I spent like 150, so I had an extra virtual cash. So when I start earning that XP
mm-hmm.
to build them up, I can just go ahead and just not have to wait to have to earn that virtual cash. I have a nice little nest egg. Well, okay, cool. I earned this badge. It's going to cost me $4,000 VC. I'm just going to pay for it now. So.
What's his rating? What's your player's rating?
He started off at an 85. I got him at a 91 now.
Oh, that's good. So you actually you made an NBA team, I'm assuming, and you're like a starter.
Yeah, yeah, no. He just my player, so I start from scratch. He's coming off the bench, six man. He averaged about 32 points a game, about 9 rebounds.
And you're coming off the bench at a 91 and averaging 30 points a game.
Yeah, because you have to follow. You got to go through the storyline.
Okay. Damn. They're hating on your guy now.
Yeah, like I'm just a rookie coming. You know, I'm a four-year college player who coming off the bench. They didn't have much potential in me. I'm a rubber rouser. That's a storyline. And now I'm in Oklahoma City.
Okay. There's nowhere to go but work on your game. You can go to Sonic and then you can just practice basketball.
That's all I could do.
Yeah.
and maybe Aaron and I then go to like a cafe shop and get free Wi-Fi.
Damn. Well, that's how they do those games now. That's pretty intense. Like I played through Madden is actually I've had the most fun that I ever had playing Madden in years. But I just did like a franchise thing with the Cowboys, but I did play that story mode, and I got I won the national championship, and like he's like he was a prospect, but then they sat him down because they had this other guy, and then they had this kid that had cancer, and the cancer kid was like, "You gotta throw 3 touchdowns for me, okay?" And I was like, "Fuck!" It's like, can I win the fuck? Let me just win the game for you. How about that? Let me just win the game. Shit. And then you're a black quarterback, so they don't think the coach is like, we're just going to have a simple playbook for you. They don't open the playbook. I was like, God damn, fucking racist too. So I played through that, and I got drafted by the Dolphins, but I didn't really play after that. But I can see how that shit is fun, though. But I guess maybe I just don't have – I don't want to invest that time or playing it. I'm just so used to playing like, oh, I'll just play the season. And I'll play with these guys. Like if I start a season in 2K, it's going to be with the Pelicans. Like, yeah, Zion is fun, but it's a young team. It's not like I think it's cheating, you know, if you play with another team. Like, I don't know. To me, it feels like cheating.
Well, I always, if I do the GM series, I always pick, like, the worst team, or I pick my team, like, the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
And then I do a whole bunch of trades. They'll get that salary cap under.
Yeah.
And then, I'll simulate the whole season. I'd rather do the back office stuff and, like, build up my team.
Oh, okay.
Versus the play of the game. So, I just simulate the whole season. When I can hear that, then I might play a game, get blown up because my team is trash, because I'm like trying to get the salary cap. I'm trying to tank.
Try to tank the team and get a big pick.
Yeah, you try to get a big pick. Try to be a destination for a top free agent, top piece. You know, so man, I just enjoy it, man. Especially that, like I said, I mean, we got the time now. Like, June 10th, you know. You know, when I think I said this on Facebook, I'm like, when the governor said June 10th, I forgot we were still in the month of March when he said that.
Shit, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, so it's like, yo, March, April. So you're like March, April. We was at the end of March. So it was like April, May, June. So you're looking at two and a half months.
Mm-hmm.
Close to 2.5 months where it's like, what are you going to do? You know, so.
Yeah. I have no excuse to not beat some of these games. Like, I need to finish God of War, and I need to finish. I just dropped $40 on this game, Control, and yeah, dude. There's no excuse. I need to finish some of these. But I don't know. Then I just, you know, I needed to be doing other shit too, obviously. But you know, you spend money on these fucking games. You're just like, I need to beat them. You know. Well, Mike, dude, this has been great, man. I don't want to hold you too long, but I want you to plug your album. It's great, dude. So plug this album. It's really great.
Thank you. It's called Hashtag Promote Mike B. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon. It's everywhere. It's the best. Some of the best work I think I've put out.
Okay.
You go on olmikeb.com, olmikeb.com. I have some merch there, shirts, it might be merch there as well. Okay. And yeah, man, Chris, I appreciate you, man. This is like my second part, like outside of Three Guys On, this is the second podcast that I've been a guest on. That's not mine, man. I appreciate you actually having me on. I appreciate that.
Oh, of course, man. And I always enjoy listening to you on Three Guys On, and and I have to get into what's your podcast name? Talk about your podcast too.
Oh, it's the Open Mic, MIKE radio podcast.
Okay.
It's basically, it's a very finicky schedule, but I have the time.
Okay. I understand. I've been doing this thing for like 7 years, and I normally shoot for Sundays, but you know, I try to get them out when I get them out. And I was like, hey, it's free, guys. So, the people that I have on Patreon are basically the only reason that I keep doing it. And then having conversations with folks like you is another good reason to do it. So, man, it's all love, man. You're doing really great work, and more people need to hear you and this album, man, because it's really dope. It's inspiring to me.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you. And as soon as it's over with, man, as soon as we get out of house arrest, man, we got to do a show together. We got to talk to some bookers and do, because I'm shocked. I think we actually did a show together and it got canceled.
Do you and me? I think you were trying to get me on it. It was like we did Three Guys On, and I was coming from somewhere, and we were at Randolph's place, and you had somebody drop out or something. And you were going to get me to do it. And I was like, I don't know if I should, because I don't want to get in trouble with my parents, because I was staying with them. I was probably 37 at the time. And I was like, I don't want to get in trouble because my parents will get mad that I'm not at home.
Yeah, that totally was understandable.
Yeah, that's another thing that I had to struggle with, like coming up. Like, I would come home and do shows and stuff. You know, I would spend time with my parents, but it's like only so much sitting around you can do at the house. And I'm like, I'm not a bad person. I'll go out and do a show at the Draft House, have a good time, and come back home, you know? And like, well, you just come home to do shows. I'm like, Mom, This stuff has helped my career. It's the reason I can fucking, one of the reasons I can send you shit, mail you groceries from fucking delivery services so you don't have to go out.
Not trying to hear any of that.
Yeah, they don't care about that shit. They don't care about that. But you gotta love them. You gotta love them, though.
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mike. Well, hold on to the line, and we'll close it out. Thanks so much, Mike, for doing the show. Buy, promote Mike B. Buy it. You know, just buy the fucking thing. You've listened. If you listen to my podcast, you probably listen to Three Guys On. You probably listen to The Black Guy Who Tips. A lot of the content that people put out, it's free. The guy's selling stuff. He's put his life into it. Buy the fucking album. Buy it. All right. Let me not be an asshole. All right. Take it easy, everybody.